Gavin Jones here, and welcome to another edition of From the Bookshelf. Today we will be continuing to read from The Motorcycle Diaries, A Journey Around South America by Ernesto Che Guevara, and translated by Anne Wright and published by Verso in 1995. By way of a refresher, I'll read a short amount of the introduction of the translator. Ernesto Guevara de la Serna's travel diaries, transcribed by Che's personal archive in Havana, recount the trials, vicissitudes, and tremendous adventure of a young man's journey of discovery through Latin America. Ernesto began writing these diaries when, in December of 1951, he set off with his friend Alberto Granado on their long-awaited trip from Buenos Aires down the Atlantic coast of Argentina, across the Pampa, through the Andes and into Chile, and from Chile northwards to Peru and Colombia, and finally to Caracas, Venezuela. These experiences were later rewritten by Ernesto himself as a narrative, offering the reader a deeper insight into Che's life, especially at a little-known stage, and revealing details of his personality, his cultural background, and his narrative skill, the genesis of a style which he develops in his later works. The reader can also witness the extraordinary change which takes place in him as he discovers Latin America, gets right to its very heart, and develops a growing sense of a Latin American identity which makes him a new precursor of the new history of America. And now into the narrative. We decided to go to Bariloche via the Seven Lakes route, so called because that's how many lakes the road skirts before reaching the town. La Poderosa did the initial kilometres with only a few minor mechanical hitches, until, with the night upon us, we did the old broken headlamp trick so we could sleep in a navvy's hut, a handy rouse because it was unusually cold at night. So biting was the cold that a stranger soon appeared asking to borrow a blanket because he and his wife were camping at the lakeside and were freezing. We went to share some mate with this stoical pair, who had been living in the lakes for some time with just a tent and the contents of their rucksacks. They made us feel pathetic. We set off again along lakes of different sizes, surrounded by ancient forests, the sense of nature caressing our nostrils. But strangely enough, the sight of a lake, wood, lone house, with neat garden soon began to pall. Looking at the scenery, superficially only captures its boring uniformity, and it doesn't get into the spirit of the countryside. For that, you need to spend several days in a place. We finally reached the northern end of Lake Nahuel Huapi and slept on the shore, happy and stuffed after a huge barbecue. But when we took to the road again, we noticed a puncture in the rear wheel and a tedious battle with the inner tube began. Every time we put a patch on one side, we punctured the other side of the tube until we had run out of patches and had to spend the night right there. An Austrian who worked as a caretaker and had raced motorbikes in his youth let us stay in an empty shed, torn between his desire to help fellow bikers in need and fear of his boss. In his broken Spanish, he told me there was a puma in the vicinities. Pumas are vicious, and they're not afraid to attack people, and they have a huge blonde mane. When we went to close the door, we found that only the bottom half shut. It was like a stable door. I put our revolver by my head in case the mountain lion, who filled our thoughts, decided to make an untimely midnight visit. I was just getting light when I woke to the sound of claws scratching at the door. Beside me, Alberto was all apprehensive silence. My hand was tense on the cocked revolver. Two luminous eyes stared at me from the shadow of the trees. They sprang forward like a pouncing cat, while the black mass of the body slid over the door. It was instinctive. The brakes of intelligence failed, and my instinct for preservation pulled the trigger. The thunder resounded round the walls for a moment and stopped on a lighted torch in the doorway. Shouting at us, in desperation, our timid silence knew the reason, or at least guessed from the caretaker's stentorian tones and the historical sobs of his wife bending over the corpse of Bobby, her nasty, grumpy dog. Alberto went to Angostura to get the tire fixed, and I thought I'd have to spend the night in the open because I couldn't ask for a bed in a house where we were considered murderers. Luckily, our bike was near another navvy's house, and he put me up in the kitchen with a friend of his. At midnight, I heard the sound of rain and was going to get up to cover the bike with a tarpaulin. Irritated by the sheepskin which served as a pillow, I decided to take a few puffs from my asthma inhaler. As I did so, my sleeping companion woke up. When he heard the puff, he made a sudden jerky movement, then stayed silent. I sensed his body rigid under his blankets, clutching a knife, holding his breath. With the experience of the previous night, I decided to keep still for fear of being knifed in case mirages were contagious in those parts. We reached San Carlos de la Bariloche in the evening of the next day and spent the night at the police station waiting for the Modesta Victoria to sail over towards the border with Chile. We were in the kitchen of the police station, sheltering from the storm unleashed its fury outside. I read and reread the incredible letter. Suddenly all my dreams of home bound up with the eyes which saw me off in Miramar, and they were shattered apparently for no reason. An enormous weariness came over me, and half dozing, I listened to the lively chatter of a globe-trotting prisoner concocting 1,000 exotic brews safe in his audience's ignorance. I could hear the warm, seductive words while the faces around him leaned forward, the better to hear his tales unfold. I could see, as if through a distant fog, an American doctor we had met there in Bariloche nodding. "You'll get where you're going. You've got guts. But I think you'll stay in Mexico. It's a wonderful country." I suddenly caught myself flying off with a sailor to distant lands, well away from what my current drama should be. A feeling of profound unease came over me. That drama didn't affect me. I began to worry about myself and started a weepy letter, but I couldn't. It was hopeless to try. In the half-light, magical figures hovered, but she wouldn't appear, though I loved her until this moment when I realized I couldn't feel. I had to think her back again. I had to fight for her. She was mine, mine, and I fell asleep. A warm sun lit the new day, the day we were leaving, our last day on Argentinian soil. Getting the bike onto the Modesta Victoria wasn't easy, but eventually we did it, and getting it off again wasn't easy either. At the same time, there were, in that tiny place by the lake with the pompous name of Puerto Blest, a few kilometres, 3 or 4 at most, and back on water, a dirty green lake, this time Laguna Frias. Another short voyage before reaching the customs at last. Then the Chilean immigration post on the other side of the Cordillera, which is much lower at this latitude. There the route crosses yet another lake, fed by the river Tronador, which rises in the majestic volcano of the same name. In contrast to the Argentinian lakes, the water in this one, Lake Esmeralda, is warm and makes the task of bathing enjoyable. Much more to our taste, I may say. Up in the mountains at a place called Casa Pange is a vantage point from where you get a panoramic view over Chile. It's a sort of crossroads, at least it was for me at that particular moment. I was looking to the future, up the narrow strip of Chile and what lay ahead, muttering the lines from the poet Otero Silva. And that's it from me for today and from the bookshelf. I'm Gary.